The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, gamble wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Thursday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my poorly dressed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how the best ride in Orlando is not at Disney World. I'm going to tell you how Carson missed his cue, and also why scoreboards just make lousy pets.
Scoreboards certainly do make lousy pets, although you don't have to feed them very often and rarely have to give them water. That being said, Dave, what do you got for a first take today?
Well, let's talk about scoreboards. How about that opening night of the NBA? We're going to talk about this a little bit in tomorrow's show, too, because there was a front page article in the USA Today, in the sports section, talking to some local sportsbook managers about how much the lack of handle is going to hurt their properties. Here's the issue they really may have, though. Even when they do play, the amount wagered per game is likely to be much less than usual. We sat down and talked with some people yesterday afternoon who played the NBA pretty big, computer-generated power ratings guys. They're saying, you know what? Our stuff is based on that 82-game schedule, the ebbs and flows and the rhythms of it. Many times they don't play a lot until they have 20 games in, where they've got a little bit of a base to work from. They see not only does a shortened season limit their ability to build data points, but it's an entirely different flow. Instead of a marathon, it could be a sprint. That means an entirely different handicapping approach. So even when these games do come back, that handle per game is not likely to be where it used to be. Teddy, what do you bring with us from Thursday?
Well, I'm thinking about going to a game this weekend, Dave. And, you know, living in Las Vegas, great town for college basketball. I mean, you get the conference tournaments here. You get the WAC conference and the Mountain West conference and the Big West all come to Vegas for their conference tournaments. You get the preseason tournaments in town. At the Orleans has one, and there's always one at the Thomas and Mack, or two, or three, and you can really watch some good college basketball. And of course, the UNLV Running Rebels are, you know, a fringe top 25 team, a fringe tournament team on a year-in, year-out basis. But you get some good games at the Thomas and Mack, and some really good opportunities to chow down with college basketball. Football, on the other hand, not so many good games to watch here in Las Vegas. In fact, few and far between. You do have the Las Vegas Bowl every December, usually right around Christmas. I go to that, not every year, but almost every year, unless it's freezing outside. And I'm telling you, living in Vegas, yes, you do get soft when it comes to cold. It's not like back in the day when I was willing to walk 3 miles in 20 below weather in Michigan. Out here, when it's below 50, you start getting the shivers a little bit. But the bottom line is, I'm thinking about going to a game on Saturday night. I want to go see Boise State play live. I've never seen the Broncos live. And so they're 41-point chalk. Maybe we don't get to the end of the game necessarily, but I think it'd be fun to go down to Sam Boyd Stadium and watch UNLV get their butts kicked late on Saturday night. And, of course, the game being played at the right time, at least it's a late game. If it was early action, too much going on. We talk about the 7:30 kickoffs. Might just be able to fit that one in on Saturday night if I'm willing to miss the back end of LSU Alabama. But of course, when we talk about Mountain West football, it transitions us nicely into Market Watch. We're going to talk about MAC football. Do you guys like MAC football? You better, because it's on every weeknight. It was on Tuesday. It was on Wednesday. We have MAC football discussed tonight. We've got more MAC football tomorrow. Guess what? Same story next week. Tuesday games, Wednesday games. The MAC doing what they can to make the conference relevant from a national standpoint. And, of course, that means national TV games whenever ESPN gives them the opportunity.
Of course, we've got one for you tonight, and we'll almost pretend like it's money time already because we can tie this into something we've talked about on the show already this week. You've got Akron going to Miami. to play the Redhawks tonight. Earlier in the week, we talked about how defenses in November start to wear down. Slower players become even more slow. Some of these smaller guys in the secondary just simply get beaten up, having made too many tackles over the course of the first couple of months. So what have we seen the first two nights of this MAC extravaganza? Boy, a whole lot of offense. 63-60 on Tuesday. We were trying to find the last time a team had scored 60 points in regulation and lost a game. We couldn't find it. We mentioned yesterday Temple had played seven straight unders going into that game against Ohio. Easy over ticket. MAC football getting a lot looser now than it was earlier in the year. Does it look, Teddy, like tonight is more of the same?
I certainly wouldn't be betting unders in this ball game. And, you know, we talk about the quarterback play here because obviously some of the themes we talked about on yesterday's show when it comes to red zone execution, when it comes to big play potential, cashing over tickets is the two key factors for cashing over tickets. Obviously, QB play is a huge element in that equation. So let's talk about the quarterbacks tonight. Certainly the Miami O side of the equation. You have Zach Dysart, who's been solid this year, 62% completions, 7.5 yards per pass attempt, a 14-8 touchdown to interception ratio. And yet, even with Dysart putting up decent numbers, at times, the Redhawks offense has been really shaky, spotty, inept. You know, the Kent game certainly stands out to me where they finished with a grand total of 9 points thanks to a late safety. But on the other end of the equation, you know, here are the Akron Zips, who last week made a furious rally in the fourth quarter trying to get their first win against an FBS foe. Came up short on a late two-point conversion try. They were trying to win it at the end of regulation instead of sending it to overtime against Central Michigan. Their quarterback, Clayton Moore, a little bit spotty. 51% completion, 6.2 yards per pass attempt, a 9-7 TD to INT ratio. Those aren't necessarily the type of numbers we'd expect to see from games we were saying, hey, check out the over in this one. That being said, both these quarterbacks have gotten a little bit better as the season has progressed. Dysart with more experience, more gaining experience, and in terms of skill position talent, these teams at least have a decent amount of skill. This isn't a team like, Eastern Michigan that's completely devoid of big playmakers, for example.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about Rob Bonello, the new coach at Akron. Last year, his first season, ugly transition. What we're seeing in year number two, you know, the scoreboard results aren't good. They're still losing games, but he's playing a lot of his younger kids. Clayton Moore, only a sophomore, a transfer from Ole Miss. If you were signed as a scholarship quarterback in the SEC, you can do good things in the MAC over time. Problem early in the year, injuries in the offensive line, very young skill cast. But what INL is doing is letting the young guys play. You'll see Jawan Chisholm, a freshman at running back, outside chance of getting 1,000 yards this season. Keith Sconyers, a wide receiver, good downfield threat. And the offensive line as healthy tonight as it's been since early in September. So things will get better for them. By gambling with youth, you're sort of reinvigorating a program that was on hard times. And we actually like that decision to go for two at the end of Saturday's loss. Being aggressive, I think that carries over tonight. Also, when we talk about Dysart, early in the season, some games against some difficult defenses that Miami had to face. But look at the last 2 weeks, 707 passing yards, 69 points. That's showing that now that they're stepping down in class and facing some of these MAC defenses that are wearing down a bit, there is a little bit of potential there. We wouldn't be surprised if it was a 3-0 run to the over in these midweek MAC games.
Thank you for sending those great emails. We're getting them on a daily basis. We're answering them on a daily basis. And please keep those emails coming. Sportsday@covers.com. This is an interactive show. We really can't take phone calls live over the air. So the best way to get your questions answered, again, send those emails. Sportsday@covers.com. Or you can always call the toll-free listener rant line, 866-966-4599. And every day we're going into the posting forums and getting some of the questions that we're answering on the show from there. Covers.com. Go into the postums. That's not covers.com/posting forums. It's covers.com, and just click on the forums to get there. When we come back, it's time to scrub up and go post-mortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action. from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. We're going to go to the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the operating room to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
We want the scoreboards to be our friends. We want them to be loyal, never lie to us, you know, like dogs, and particularly to help us understand games that we're not able to see for ourselves. Like just about any time Rob Akey and Idaho are playing in a game, because if they're on television, a lot of times we're watching something else, although I do like to watch a lot of these smaller schools play when given the opportunity, even watching an Idaho game over the likes of, I don't know, Bama, LSU or something, if I have the choice between the two. That's why you like to have multiple TVs in the office so you can watch multiple games at the same time. But the bottom line is, not a lot of times we're going to see Idaho on TV, and that means that we have to take a look at the scoreboards to get a full understanding of what happens in recent Idaho games. Now, we've seen Idaho lose competitive games over the last 3 weeks. A competitive loss to Louisiana Tech, a competitive loss to New Mexico State, a competitive loss to Hawaii. The scoreboard is going to say, hey, things are fine with the Vandals right now. Maybe they're not winning these games, but they're certainly competing, and the offense is moving the football. But scoreboards aren't like dogs when it comes to loyalty. They're cold. They're calculating. They're unfeeling bits of technology that are going to betray us if we don't pay attention. So there's something that we need to do with a double take in terms of the scoreboard results for this particular team, Dave.
Teddy may watch Idaho games, but we know that you don't. We know you didn't watch any of the last three. You were watching better teams because in Division I, it's about 117 out of 200 would be classified as better. Here's the problem. Those last three games don't look that bad. You might not have done a double take at all, maybe not adjusted your power ratings in any way. But Idaho scored 49 points in those games with one offensive touchdown, just one, and that was against three bad defenses. They got five touchdowns from the defense and special teams. Now, not only does that make the scoreboard look better offensively, but it kept the games closer. But now here's the problem. If you play three bad teams and you get those kind of bounces, you know, you literally get the equivalent of almost 12 full points a game off of special teams and defensive touchdowns. You better win. If you get those bounces and still lose, that's a terrible sign. Those three weak teams they faced, each of them had their best defensive game of the season against the Idaho offense. If you only looked at the scoreboard, you wouldn't have noticed that. That's why you got to come with us into the postmortem every day. Clitzy Back made probably the best play of his NFL career earlier this season, intercepting Drew Brees in the fourth quarter to seal a 26-20 Tampa Bay win over the Saints. It was a fourth and goal gamble that New Orleans took to try to win the game, and it failed. After the interception, Tampa got the ball out at the 20-yard line, got two first downs, game over. But there's something a little interesting about this one. So it's going to be a coroner's inquest time, because these teams meet again Sunday, this time on the New Orleans home field. If we go back inside of that first game, we find something that might tell us a little better story than just looking at that final score.
Well, after that Brees INT, the Saints were -4 in turnovers for the game. And obviously, you're not going to win many games in the NFL or in any sport when that happens. Well, how often do teams with a -4 turnover differential win the game? Well, let's flip it for just a second. Teams +4 or more turnovers since the AFL-NFL merger back in 1970, teams that are +4 in turnover margin win straight up 94.2% of the time. So less than 6% of the time will a team with a -4 find a way to win the ball game. Now, this is just one piece of the equation of what made that final play, that great play by Black in the end zone, so intriguing. Now, let's suppose it's a touchdown pass instead of an interception in that instance. We're just going to put on the hypothetical hats for a minute. Supposedly the TD pass, and then the Saints hang on to win 27-26. Well, that means they would have won with a -3 turnover differential, something also that is truly rare. Teams -3 in turnovers win less than 12% of the time. Again, we're talking about numbers dating back over 40 years since the AFL-NFL merger. Less than 12% of the time, the teams -3 find a way to win the game even straight up, let alone covering spreads as a favorite. Now, that's what made the first go-round between these teams so interesting. Tampa Bay goes away with a close, hard-fought win. But when the turnover count is that far in their favor, well, they're supposed to win this game going away, winning it by margin. And remember, the first Buccaneers first down following that turnover was one of these tight receptions on the sideline with Desmond Briscoe. It had to be approved by replay before it was accepted as a third down conversion. Let's just say, again, putting on our hypothetical hats, that replay was overturned. New Orleans would have had the ball back with a -4 differential and a chance to win the ball game. So maybe that 26-20 final score from the first meeting needs to be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt. And New Orleans certainly going to come in with a different mindset this week and perhaps a different level of execution.
A quick note to a forum poster watching live. That was a Chimay Belgian ale on that clip that you watched. But we can't do that here. It's 11:20 in the morning. That's for a little bit later in the day.
Time out. A Chimay Belgian ale?
Yeah. The guy who asked the question knows what we're talking about.
Beer!
The rest of you, don't worry about that. When we come back, we've got a few other viewer mails we're going to get to. And when we go inside the numbers, we're going to break down more about these turnover percentages and what they mean in the NFL. You're watching a sober version of Vegas Sports Day.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, time to answer some viewer emails. We have one good one today from David. David said, I just tried this last night to success. Trying again tonight and wanted to get your thoughts on it. This is what I did. I bet the favorite to win by 1.5 at usually in the range of +180 to +220 odds. Then I bet the underdog to win straight up anywhere from +110 to +200. The only way you lose is when the favorite wins by exactly one goal. Last night, the only game that was a loser was Caps Ducks. What's your take? Is this possibly a profitable situation, Dave?
No. And my ancestors might not be happy with the phrase, but in gambling parlance, it's called the Polish middle, where you're actually doing the opposite. You're not hoping to catch a middle on the game. You're hoping to avoid it. Problem being, if it's a baseball team on the run line that wins by one, or if it's a hockey team that wins by one goal, you lose both ends of that ticket. You win small when you win. You lose big when you lose. The math just will not add up for you over time. The only time we could recommend it is if you see a game with a high degree of volatility one way or the other, where you think it's unlikely to fall on that one. Those are few and far between. Not a strategy that we would recommend going forward.
Yeah, and in general, when you're talking about sample sizes, I recommend, again, I'm not trying to insult you in the slightest, but I recommend looking at it for more than one night. Generally, these sample sizes, you want to take a look at a season or multiple seasons. And you note that in both baseball with the run lines and hockey with the puck lines, that winning by 1.5 or more than 1.5 versus the dog winning by one or more, it's all factored into the number. And when it's factored into the number, that means that it's difficult to beat the juice involved in this type of equation. That being said, happy to answer the question. Thank you for sending them in. Keep those emails coming. The email address, again, sportsday@covers.com. And now, it's time to go deep inside the numbers. Dave, the crack research staff has come up with something about turnovers today.
Let's go right back to today's postmortem on New Orleans-Tampa Bay. And the reason why we brought that up is to show just how rare it would have been if New Orleans had been able to win that game. When you get a big turnover differential, not only should you win, you should win easily. So let's go a little bit further with it. When we go inside the numbers for Thursday, let's look at the full graph. This is going back to the NFL-AFL merger, and it shows you the value. If you're plus one in turnovers, you're going to win two out of three. Plus two, you're going to win over 80% of the time. And as we alluded to from the New Orleans-Tampa matchup, that plus three, 88.1, plus four or more, you should win 94.2%. The fact that Tampa Bay was hanging on for dear life at the end with that major advantage against New Orleans tells us there might have been something to that first matchup that makes you take a second look before they meet again on Sunday.
Coming up, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Enough with the ales. It's time to crack open a beer with our Insider Six Pack, six tidbits of knowledge. What kind of ale were you talking about? Belgian ale?
Most sophisticated people, most, would have already gotten that.
It's a Budweiser crowd, man. We're talking a Budweiser, Natty Light.
It's a Budweiser, you know? Panel, apparently, at least on one side.
Larry Eustace's got nothing on us. We're all Natty Light fans up here. All right, let's start with Insider Six Pack, and we're going to start with the Indiana Hoosiers, where Kevin Wilson is doing his best Chuck Long impersonation through the first couple of months of the season. Of course, Chuck Long, another former Oklahoma offensive coordinator who got all kinds of accolades for winning big games with an offense, and then got his first head coaching gig and, oh, crashed and burned at San Diego State. Kevin Wilson trying to do that at Indiana. We talked about some of the stuff last week with the Hoosiers football team. Trey Robertson getting his first start at quarterback, and Robertson showed his ability certainly last week against Northwestern. He threw for 169 yards and a touchdown. He also ran for 121 yards and a tutty, and he led Indiana to 38 points and 488 total yards of offense, which are pretty good numbers. Unfortunately for the Hoosiers, they lost the game by three touchdowns because their defense is that bad, and now it's going to get much tougher for Trey Robertson and this Indiana offense. They just lost to Mario Belcher, who was just two receptions away from being the school's all-time leading pass catcher, but Belcher and Kevin Wilson never seem to be on the same page. He only caught 25 passes in six games, and he kicked off the team, essentially. Wilson, basically, his quote was, "The best players, our seniors, are held to a higher standard, whether it's on the field or off the field, or with performance. It's just doing things right. We don't have sacred cows. No individual is above anything." But it's clear that Wilson is kind of pushing the old guys out and setting up for his young recruits to really take over on both sides of the football. But exacerbating the absence of Belcher this week, they also lost Deucey Wilson for the remainder of the season with a knee injury. He was tied for third on the team in receptions. And now Roberson has to go and use that shorthanded wide receiver core against, Ohio State and Michigan State, arguably the two best defenses in the conference, over the course of the next two ball games.
Biggest line move on the College Board this week, Texas over Texas Tech. A game as low as 10.5 early in the week, now climbing above 14. Prime reason for that, major injury problems in the Texas Tech secondary. They lost Terrence Bullitt and Trey Porter both against Iowa State last week. Neither's going to return. You saw how badly that defense fell down after they left that game. They weren't competitive in a game that they were actually big favorites to win. They did get Eugene Nova back in practice on Wednesday. He's had four starts, wasn't able to play last Saturday. They hope he can start this week. If not, here's how bad it's going to get. Freshman Sean Corker will be starting in the secondary. He was playing wide receiver just 2 weeks ago. And another receiver they wanted to switch over to defense for this week, Cornelius Douglas, they can't make the switch yet. He's injured, wasn't able to practice yesterday. Very shorthanded Texas Tech secondary.
And I know it's going to say Navy seniors up there, but I'm here to talk about the Monroe Doctrine. So we're going to have to look at that one first. We'll come back to Navy in just a second. And, you know, we know there's a kind of a big game in LSU, Alabama, for the Bayou State this week. But there's also a pretty good little game where Louisiana Monroe and Louisiana Lafayette face off in their annual Sun Belt Showdown. And it's a battle for bragging rights, and it's also a battle with first place on the line for Louisiana Lafayette, who's been a real under-the-radar point spread success story and under-the-radar straight-up success story so far this season out of the Sun Belt. Now, we've seen the money come in early in the week on Louisiana Monroe. The Warhawks down to +4.5 in most locations, opening as high as 6 or even higher than that in a couple of spots. But the money's come in on Monroe for this contest, and I'm not so sure that's money that I would say. I understand it's a rivalry game. We have to look at this Louisiana Monroe injury front right now. Their best running back, Centarius Donald. The wide receiver, Tyler Kane, is the team's best punt returner. Tight ends, Kevin Milton and Ty Kittle. They're all going to be out this week. Wide receiver, Tavares May, the second leading receiver, hasn't practiced yet this week. And, of course, Darius Prelo, who leads the team with interceptions with 4. He's been downgraded to doubtful. So skill position and defensive concerns for Louisiana Monroe this week. If you like Sun Belt football, hey, we're talking about MAC football. We got to talk about Sun Belt football. If you like it, these are injuries you're going to need to know.
And you know, on the same line there, Sun Belt football can be awfully entertaining sometimes. While you think that Southern Cal and Stanford were playing the game of the night Saturday, or maybe Ohio State against Wisconsin, how about that finish UL Monroe in Western Kentucky? 22 points in the final minute of regulation. Game ended up in overtime. Quite a classic. Senior day for Navy at Annapolis. Not quite the one they wanted to have. This particular group came in with a chance to set the all-time academy record for most wins by one group. That's not going to happen. It's been a disappointing season, but possibly some reasons for optimism this week. A couple of key cogs are going to be back on the field. Chris Proctor, the quarterback, didn't play against Navy last week. He's practicing again. Now, he may only share duties with Trey Miller. His shoulder might not hold up for him to play the full game, but Miller's a pretty good number two guy. And it gives you a left-handed, right-handed combination. Makes it tougher to defenses to prepare for in that option game. But the big news at Navy, and you'd like to see this sort of thing happen with the senior, Aaron Santiago, slot back, really one of the key cogs of that offense. He hasn't played since he broke a forearm back against Western Kentucky in early September. Santiago not only cleared to play, he's right back in the starting lineup on the depth chart this week. So look for those Navy seniors. Even though it's been a disappointing season, to play with a lot of fire in the last game in Annapolis.
And I remember seeing some quotes after Santiago got hurt, talking about the impact that injury would have on the Middies. But in my wildest dreams, I didn't think Navy was going to lose 6 games in a row. They haven't done that, obviously, since I believe 2001 or maybe it was 2002, very early in the Paul Johnson era. Let's talk about the Washington Redskins here for a minute, the injury-riddled Washington Redskins, and it's just getting worse. From Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan and whatever other Shanahans they have on the payroll there in D.C. But the last thing they needed this week was more injuries to worry about. But guess what? Free safety, Oshie Ataguay, both knee and toe injuries. He's an impact player on that defense. He hasn't been able to practice. The tight end, Fred Davis, who's been basically the only healthy pass catcher in recent weeks, the team's leading receiver, in fact, he's got a sprained ankle, may not be able to go. Of course, the other tight end, Chris Cooley, he's out already. The offensive line is in tatters right now. And there's not going to be any boost whatsoever for the newly acquired running back, Tashard Choice. Maybe he can help them game plan against the Cowboys, but he's not going to be able to play on the field against anyone. Choice has been ruled out this week with a hamstring injury.
Good news and bad news in Oakland. We had talked earlier in the week about getting T.J. Houshmandzadeh back as wide receiver. Back with Hugh Jackson, who's coached him before, with Carson Palmer, who's thrown the ball to him before. But they're going to miss Darren McFadden, the best player in that offense this week. McFadden's foot not healing, still in a walking boot yesterday. He was on crutches at practice. You will not see him on Sunday. The plus side is Houshmandzadeh has been there for one practice, and they're so impressed at how quickly he assimilated into the system. Here's a quote from Carson Palmer. He knows more about offensive and defensive football than any non-quarterback I've ever been around. He understands concepts, schemes, alignments, all the little things a lot of receivers overlook. It's going to be a big help for these young guys to have him around. We like that quote from Palmer. That says something good about what can happen. Carson, we don't like this next one. because you just blew it. Talking about his own assimilation into Oakland. There's no comparison this week to last Wednesday. I'm comfortable with the entire playbook. Comfortable with the guys. Comfortable with the snap count. Oh, Carson, you had it right there. You had it right there in front of you. You could have been comfortable with taking the snap. You had it. You absolutely owned Phillip Rivers, and you missed your cue. You may be a starting quarterback for the Raiders, but you're not going to get invited to the Friars Club anytime soon.
Yeah, and Phillip Rivers deserves all the zings he can get. Let's see. Pro Bowl center handing the ball to him with, oh, at least a push on that stupid Monday night game on the line? Well, it's Thursday. Got to get over it. Okay, I'm over it. In fact, you need to get over it too. And so when we come back, we're going to talk about all the new games that we can talk about for tonight. We're going to put all this information to work for you. It's money time.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's money time! And let's go to Chestnut Hill in Boston, where right now the Florida State Seminoles on Thursday night TV action football. Florida State minus 14.5, total of 48. Happy for the spotlight? Or perhaps are the Seminoles maybe a little bit unhappy with the national TV affair on the four-letter network on a Thursday? What do you say, Dave?
Got an interesting quote from Jumbo Fisher about this, because Florida State gets a lot of these Thursday night ACC games because they're a big draw in that conference. But he's not happy with them. He says, I understand why ESPN puts us on. I wish they wouldn't, but they do. This is what we're dealt. They have to go through it too, and we have to play. I just hate the five-day turnaround. It's very tough. Academically, it stresses you, and physically, it stresses you. We like the fact that as this program turns in Tallahassee, there is that talk about academics because it's been an issue there for a long time, but it is a problem on a short week. You know, when you've got that many kids on your traveling roster, remember, when college teams go on the road, you're taking a lot more players than an NFL team takes. So it's that administrative issue of getting all those kids on the road, getting them into the hotel, getting things organized, making sure they've got study hall at the hotel on Wednesday night. It's tough when you're traveling on a short week. But if you got to travel anywhere in the ACC this year, Chestnut Hill, not a bad place to be. Frank Spaziani, the Boston College head coach, another example of a guy who's a very good coordinator, but probably not the best choice to lead a program. This is going to be the third consecutive year that the Eagles' win-loss total has fallen.
And we spent some time earlier in the week talking about home field ratings and home field advantages and that sort of thing. And we talk about home field in the ACC. Frankly, Boston College doesn't have a strong one. And we've seen them lose repeatedly straight up on this field already this year, right from day one, when I believe you cashed a ticket going against BC, Mr. Malinsky, with the Northwestern Wildcats. I know I cashed with them when Wake Forest came to town, and another straight-up loss for BC. Of course, this is a situation where they could lose at home by two touchdowns and still cover the number. So we're not talking about those type of games where BC had to win. But the bottom line is, this is not a particularly strong home field. And this is clearly a declining program that, as you mentioned, has gotten worse under Coach Spaz in each of the 3 years that he's been at the helm. Now, they have righted the ship somewhat. They certainly found a running back in order to replace Montel Harris, who was the Big East leading rusher coming into the season, but has been banged up all year. Rolandon Finch, breakout game last week, 243 yards on 32 carries against Maryland. But there's something to be said about that Maryland defense that doesn't necessarily relate to Florida State's.
And maybe even questions about Finch himself. Florida State's defense, just brilliant numbers. Number four in the nation against the run, number three in sacks. Obviously, those are correlated. They do some things that are very creative. We've seen a lot of people in college football and even in the NFL go to these quick rushers on the outside. They become very difficult for offensive tackles to block. You'll see something different tonight if you watch this game. Florida State using smaller and quicker guys on the inside of their pass rush kind of makes them unblockable. As for Finch, you know, it's one thing to roll over a weak, weak Maryland defense on a rainy day, which is what he did on Saturday, but that was 32 carries for a young sophomore who's not accustomed to that workload. How does he recover on this short practice week? That's a pretty good beating when you're not accustomed to that. If he's heavy-legged at all tonight, going to be a lot of second and eights, a lot of third and nines. That pass rush gets unleashed, and over the course of the game, maybe it gets ugly for Boston College.
And one of the things with BC is that it's an offense that's certainly a receiving core that's basically devoid of playmakers. The quarterback, Chase Reddick, he's serviceable. You know, you quoted Arnie Lang yesterday in one of Arnie's – that's not Artie Lang, the Howard Stern guy. It's Arnie Lang, the sports handicapper. But the expression I would use for Reddick that I got from Arnie is he's a ham and egger, you know. He's not a superstar, but he's okay when given time to throw and somebody getting reasonably open downfield. When Reddick has to make good decisions with the football under pressure, not a lot of playmakers for him to find downfield. And I think BC is going to have a hard time tonight putting points on the scoreboard. The question is whether Florida – and BC defensively, they've been all right. But the question is whether Florida State's going to be able to score enough to cover this number, because I don't see BC reaching, any more than 17 at the most against this FSU defense.
Let's go to Orlando, and a nice matchup in Conference USA. We've got Tulsa against Central Florida. Central Florida, 1.5, 48.5, and a game we're going to have a lot of fun with. In all sports, we like contrast. We like it when you've got two very different styles going head-to-head. This one sure brings it to us tonight. Central Florida under George O'Leary, they want to run the ball, play power football, win with defense. Tulsa, no matter who the coach has been, they've had several transitions, and under Blankenship, it's the same story. Let's spread the field. Let's get off as many snaps as possible. Here's where the contrast comes into play. It's difficult to prepare for a team that does something very different than what you do, not just because of the X's and O's, but because you're not recruiting the kind of players to run their schemes in practice. Now this is accentuated by a short practice week. Teddy, it's got to be even tougher to prepare when it's a Thursday instead of a Saturday for a very different playbook.
Yeah, that's very true, Dave. And when we talk about the UCF defense, this has been a Knights defense that has some pretty impressive numbers so far this season, particularly at home. You look at the point counts. Well, they've allowed a grand total of 9 points in 4 home games so far this season. None of their 4 opponents on this field have gained more than 150 total yards. Those are some pretty impressive numbers, and they've helped deflate the total for this one and perhaps give UCF a fair bit of credit when it comes to the point spread, because the Knights have taken money this game open, pick them, and now they're in that 1.5, 2-point range as favorites. So really impressive defensive numbers for UCF, but they haven't faced an offense even close to what they're seeing with Tulsa. These two teams haven't played over the last 2 years. They have played 3 times in the last 4 years, and the point counts in those games, let's see, 67 and 69. On this field, 68 at Tulsa. At least one team got into the 40s in all of those recent meetings. So certainly, this contrast in style has left us with a very low total. But also, when we look at the history, it says we might have a chance of seeing some points here.
If we were on the air a month ago, we would have done a postmortem on one of those UCF games, a home game against Marshall. And what we would have told you to do with that game is throw it out. It is of absolute no meaning anywhere statistically that is going to be of value to you. It was almost a monsoon that night in Orlando. Dreadful weather, very heavy wind, heavy rain. Those statistics don't tell you anything about Marshall. They don't really tell you anything about Central Florida. Hence why we're seeing this total that we believe is lower than it should be. It's not going to be raining in Orlando tonight. It's going to be beautiful weather for this game. So, Teddy, can we take advantage of a bad line here?
Well, I think there's a potential that we can do that. Again, this is a defense for UCF that allowed SMU and Marshall to run up these season highs, and it allowed UAB, who was winless at the time. They gained more than 500 yards, were it not for a couple of interceptions in the end zone. They'd have scored in the 40s in that ball game. But the bottom line here, well, it's time for the play of the day, don't you think? And that bottom line for UCF and Tulsa, we're going to look at the over the total, 48.5, the current number. Again, UCF, Tulsa, over 48.5. That's Thursday's play of the day. And that's going to wrap it up. That's all we got for you on this Thursday edition. Thank you so much for watching and spending time out of your busy day. I got to change it up the end. Not sure how to do it, so we'll just say thanks. Enjoy the games, and good luck. We'll see you again tomorrow.